did you not get the message that you from the last time you listened to this absolute car crash? That, and I'm assuming you have listened before. That the it's just why what I've discovered is over. I think we've done over 30 episodes of this now. I want to say by this point. So you do have to wonder how far I can go with this, and just I think. Anyway, thank you for joining us on the Host of Guest and Wardrobe once more. This episode is another one of the... Well, it's kind of mystery guest-ish, shall we say. And I am just on the Skype call now with producer Gregor Smith, awaiting our first our guest. Oh, God, we got video.
Oh, sorry.
I said, oh, God.
Yeah, that's a really nice introduction.
Sorry.
Oh God, it's horrible.
Please say no. I just was very surprised that we had video because I'm so used to just audio only.
I can turn it off. There we go.
Yeah, it's up to you. You don't have to turn it off. Well, I was just doing the intro, and I was just saying it's a mystery guest, sort of, because it's my understanding that we've done this before.
We have, indeed, back in the before times, before I transitioned and changed my name.
So how are you?
I'm doing pretty good. How are you?
Yeah, you know, getting by in these crazy times.
Cabin fever has definitely been settling in big time.
Cabin fever, yeah. And then from that fleeting moment I saw the video, I think I might have seen you made some sort of fort.
Yes, I have indeed made a blanket fort because I don't have a wardrobe, so I felt I should have some sort of substitute for this podcast.
I'm really like, if I'm going to take anything away from doing these Skype calls, it's that people, I really appreciate the lengths people are going to facilitate my stupid gimmick that this is basically running off, and without it, it would just be me talking to someone. Nobody wants that.
I did attempt to cram myself into my chest of drawers, but it didn't really go too well, so this was the next best thing.
Well, it looks great. I hope Gregor gets asks you to take a picture of that, because it looks like you've put a fair amount of effort into that.
2 minutes of panicked box stacking, but yes.
So what have you been up to since we last talked?
God, how long ago was it I was on the podcast? I mean, I think I was having this conversation with Gregor on Twitter, and the answer we settled on was, actually, I don't want to think about how long ago it was. It was several years ago now, wasn't it, that I last appeared? Since then, I guess the main thing is I have joined a burlesque troupe. Yeah, that has been one of the biggest changes. It's the sort of thing that if you told me back when I was, say, 1920, that I'd be doing that, I would not have believed you. But it sort of accidentally happened, and now I get my clothes off on stage as a hobby.
How did that accidentally happen?
It happened by accident because one of the girls in the troupe, Helen, I was working with her at a lingerie shop, and she came in and said, I mean, it was a while ago now, so it's one of those things where it's become sort of a combination of actual events and fabricated memory, I think. But the long and short of it was, they didn't have a host for a show. And I happened to mention in passing, I think, that I'd done a single solitary comedy night that hadn't gone particularly well. And for some reason, that made me a good candidate to host the show. And after hosting one show, they just sort of adopted me and gradually encouraged me to take more and more clothes off on stage.
So your first experience with this was actually hosting a show?
Yes, yeah, I kind of got thrown in at the deep end.
Yeah, definitely. So how often do you do that?
Once every few months, although obviously it has stopped now because, you know, no one's going to breach containment to come and see some naked women. No one will host us mid-pandemic, so it is on hold until further notice. But we normally do about sort of 6 shows a year.
Okay, cool. That sounds good. Do you, I don't really know, I don't really know that much about burlesque. Like I often see it whenever I go to the Fringe, and like, I see a lot of there's quite a big, like, there seems to be quite a big call for it there. So, but I've never really like experienced it. So, do you have like do you go on stage as like an alternative like persona at all, or
I do. Yes. In fact, I have two. Because given that I'm so I identify as non-binary, which I suppose is the biggest change since I was last on this podcast. I figured out what the hell my gender identity is. And by that I mean my gender identity is no. But being non-binary, I kind of drift up and down the spectrum from day to day. So I have one male character and one female character that I do on stage, depending on how I'm feeling. So my female character is named Miss Vivian Vixen, and she's sort of like if you crossed a 50s pinup model with a weird wine aunt.
Sounds great.
And then my male character goes by Andy Rogeny, who's sort of a sparkly little space twink. Loves all things glitter and musical theatre. So depending on the mood, I'll be one or the other.
And do you have to practice for that then?
For the hosting, not so much. For the dancing, absolutely. there's a surprising amount of sort of thought and choreography that goes into getting your clothes off on stage.
Oh yeah, I can imagine. Yeah. So do you get the audience? What kind of audiences do you get there? Are they very supportive, or is it? I don't know. For some reason, forgive me. I'm thinking there's like a lot of seedy men there.
Do you know what? When I did the first show, that was completely what I was expecting. I was quite nervous. I thought there were going to be a lot of sort of, I thought there was going to be some potentially gross behaviour from people in the audience. But there's been absolutely none of that. Like, you get the occasional one who wanders in expecting a strip club, which is not what we end up delivering. But mostly it is, I think it's probably fair to say our audiences are predominantly female. A large subsection of that would be straight female. Like, a lot of it is very kind of celebrating other women and celebrating all sort of different forms of the female body, as pretentious as that sounds. I hate that I just said that sentence, but it's true. So it's a very kind of, it's a very supportive environment, very like bigging each other up. It doesn't really matter what size you are, what your kind of gender identity is, like, as long as you're comfortable in your own skin and happy to just get decked out head to toe in glitter and wander on stage with no clothes on, you know, you're welcome there. So
I suppose the name is named, with it being named burlesque, that kind of like maybe like suggests to people that it's going to be a bit fancy and it's more, I don't know. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's kind of, because it's called burlesque, it presents a certain, I don't know,
a certain sort of showgirl kind of attitude.
Yeah, it's more, exactly. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean,
maybe you don't get as many as seedier people that I was imagining.
I mean, the way I always explain it to people who've never been before is it's stripping with musical theatre, basically.
That's it.
You get a lot of weird and out there stuff in burlesque that you wouldn't get in an ordinary kind of, you know, if you go down the strip club down the road kind of thing. It's definitely a Venn diagram. There is some crossover. There's a lot of kind of theatricality that goes into, your general stripping as well. But for example, we have a girl in the troupe who, for our Halloween show, did an entire number dressed as Beetlejuice. Yeah, it was honestly incredible. It is one of my favourite. It is one of my favourite routines, Michelle. If you're listening, I love you.
Did they go full Beetlejuice character as well?
Yeah. She had the full kind of, she had the balding hair, full face of Beetlejuice makeup on. She was doing all of the kind of animated facial expressions, but also her tits were out.
That's great. So do you do anything, are you up to anything other than the burlesque?
Other than the burlesque, mostly, honestly, no, that has kind of consumed a lot of my life outside of work.
What's your work?
I work at Aviva, administrating pensions, which is absolutely thrilling. Just absolutely rife with, you know, adventure and new opportunities, and it's a desk job that pays the bills, and my team are lovely people, so, you know, I can't see myself leaving anytime soon.
Is there, like, there's a lot of crossover with burlesque with anything else that you've been interested in? Because you said you did one stand-up thing.
Yeah, I attempted to host one comedy night once, and it did not go particularly well. it was a very, very small kind of like attic room in a pub that nobody visited. There were about four people in the audience, and it was my first ever gig as a host. So I was there trying to get four people kind of riled up for all the comedians, and I kind of felt like I was doing all of the people in the show a disservice, because I just could not get any energy in the room at all.
It's a hard thing. Don't worry. I actually hosted a couple of times I hosted, and it's terrible. I cannot do it. I pretty much do it like a handful of times. I did it once when we did an Edinburgh show, and it just so happens that the reviewer was in that night. And we did a 3-week show, and so we had the reviewer come in, and I just happened to be doing the one night that I was hosting. And I didn't want to do it, but we were trying to just kind of see, we were just kind of rotating it at the start, and it was terrible, it was utter car crash. And yeah, so we got a famous, well, I say famous, but famous amongst friends, one-star review. So, yeah, not fun. I want to jump into quarantine-related content. I realised that this is probably one of the first episodes where we are barely scraping the current climate situation. But I'm kind of just facing up to the fact that you cannot avoid it. I understand you do a thing called Quarantunes.
I do, yes. Yeah. So I, given that I live on my own and I spend an awful lot of time on social media, I found that it was getting very, very easy to kind of spiral into just this never-ending pit of despair whenever I looked at any social media. Because everything everywhere is all coronavirus all the time. And, you know, obviously it's very important to keep up with the breaking news and with all the stuff that is going on. But at the same time, I kind of felt like I needed to introduce a little bit more positivity into people's social media feeds. So I've started posting, I try to post every day, just a little clip of a song of me playing on piano or my ukulele or
I think I saw you do one where it was TV themes. I think I recall the Parks and Recreation
Yes. Comic, but, yeah, I yeah. think that was yesterday's one, wasn't it?
Yeah, that was really good.
Oh, thank you.
Is it just go to random pianos and stuff, or is it one piano in particular? Because it seemed to be in a public space.
The ones filmed in the public space were filmed at Castle Mall in Norwich City Centre, which was where I often went to play during my lunch breaks at work, because it's just down the road from my office. Occasionally, before I started the quarantine thing, I'd film some on the piano at Norwich train station as well. I'm really loving this kind of this more recent trend of having pianos in public places, because my ego is fragile and I love to play in public places because then people say nice things to me. But yeah, so I started filming them in Castle Mall, but sadly the piano there was removed for plague reasons, because as it turns out, you know, lots of people playing one piano is a pretty big kind of way to transmit any communicable diseases. So
I think anything like that, have you done a lot of that piano stuff? Have you done piano stuff for a long time? Oh, I'm so sorry. what kind of question is that?
I mean, I have.
Surprise.
I've been playing piano for... oh God, 2 decades. I just thought about it for the first time in possibly ever and realized that, yeah, I have been playing piano for about 20 years. Because I started learning when I was 4.
Oh, when you were 4. Sorry. I thought you were about to finish off that sentence because you said...
Oh, no, sorry.
I was like, oh, no, you mean the age 4.
Yeah,
that's a long time, but obviously it's not an easy thing to just pick up. It takes a long time to do that kind of thing.
Yes, and I'm a lot more rusty than I used to be. I got very, very close to doing my grade 8 exam and then chickened out, which was about, oh God, 6 or 7 years ago now. And I always assume that people know what I mean when I say that as well, but I only recently found out that other countries don't have the musical grades like we have in England. So I had to explain to an American friend that, you know, all the different grades of kind of music learning and how we kind of quantify how good at music someone is, which seems like a daft thing when I think about it too hard, because I've always enjoyed it more when I'm just playing for the heck of it. But yeah, with the quarantunes thing, it's been partly a selfish endeavor, because it's been a way to stop myself from going insane alone in my flat. If I give myself the challenge to learn a new song every day.
Well, that's what it is. I was about to say, in a way of trying to avoid all the media and everything, you've got to have an outlay. It's partly why I'm doing this podcast anyway. If you can have something that you enjoy doing, I know, oh God, I'm going to sound like some sort of guru or something. It's just like having
self-help from the wardrobe.
Exactly. It's like, if you can, it's ridiculous, but you can just concentrate on something like that. Particularly if it's something you like, it's an easy way of avoiding all that's going on. Of course, another way of doing it is just muting words on social media. But then, you know, it's not always guaranteed that you're going to avoid it.
That's very true, but you know, there's muting it, and then there's now I'm about to sound like a self-help tosser, but you know, if you're throwing yourself into something creative in order to avoid all of the scary shit that's going on in the world outside right now, then at least you've created something. You know, you've done something that is vaguely productive. Not that you know, not self-care has to be productive, but it's nice when it is, because then you can look back at, like, I love looking back at all the little musical clips I've made, and I go, oh, I did a nice thing there. That makes me feel good about myself as well.
Yeah. Yeah, it's oh God, you know what, this episode is going to just be us forgiving everyone for the fact that we keep sounding like cliches. Right, because I was about to say, it's not just about the where you end up, it's about the journey. I sound terrible saying that, but it's true. It's actually true. Like, only the other day, I set myself a challenge of there was a submission for a script that I was trying to work towards, and usually I just don't have the motivation for it. But I had a whole day basically to write about 5 to 10 pages of a script, a complete script from start to finish, and I actually managed to do it. But I tweeted out beforehand saying, oh yeah, I've got to do this today, so I'll come back to this when I inevitably fail. And I, for one of the first times ever in those situations, I actually managed to finish it. So I think we should, you should give yourself more credit when you do follow through on these kind of projects, because it's so easy not to.
Yeah, definitely. Like, celebrate the small victories. Especially when it's doing something that you enjoy. Like, I mean, I'm not going to lie, a little bit jealous of you that you managed to get a script written, because writing is one thing that ostensibly I love doing, but have not had the motivation to do for a very long time.
Didn't you do something creative writing?
Pardon?
Didn't you do some sort of creative writing?
I did, yeah. So I did a degree in creative writing at University of East Anglia, which is, as much as I loved my time at university, is possibly a completely useless degree.
I did a BA in media production, and then just the other year I did an MA in film production. So don't worry,
you win.
I win.
To be fair to the course, it was very useful, and I did develop a lot as this is gonna sound so wanky. I developed a lot as a writer. You know, my kind of personal writing style changed a lot over the 3 years I was there. But, you know, saying that I can write really good space adventures doesn't really get you a job. I did attempt to apply for Doctor Who, but surprise, surprise, they did not take me on.
Well, have you been watching any of the latest Doctor Who?
I have. I am a lifelong Doctor Who devotee, so even if it's trash, I still watch it with a sort of "when I am king, this will not be so" kind of mentality.
apparently my mic's a bit dodge, but that's probably just because I let me adjust it, and I will cut this out in the edit. There you go. That might be better. Gregor, tell me if that's better. Gregor, join the call. Come back in, or is he not?
We saw what happened when I broke this sort of weird voice wall on the last recording. I'm not willing to on this
won't
one.
Won't let it out of hand. I promise you. I promise you won't let it out of hand.
You promised me that last time, and then we started making fact check stuff. And then you got my name wrong.
The difference. The difference here is I'm actually promising, and last time I didn't. So how are my mic levels? Am I sounding a bit better?
Yeah, that's much better.
Yeah, it's just because it fell down a bit. Right.
Have fun with that, future editing, Dan.
Oh, yeah. Oh, God. I want to ask you about your creative writing then, because you said it was sci-fi, you like sci-fi stuff?
Yes, yeah, big old sci-fi fan. It has, Mostly, I mean, I think the thing I've written the most of recently is a series of short radio plays, which is sort of, do you know what, I'm not really good at pitching my writing to people. I'm kind of a creative writing hermit. I kind of hoard it all and never show anybody. Yeah, it's a series of short radio plays. Each one's a completely different, unrelated story. It's sort of Tales of the Unexpected, but in space.
Sounds cool.
Mm.
So what's your kind of, because as I mentioned, I just did a script, and for me, what I find the hardest bit is writing dialogue.
Really?
Oh, I hate writing dialogue. I cannot, like, because I just define when I'm writing dialogue, it just comes across as so forced. And then I read it back and I'm like, how can I make this actually sound natural? And I think it's the biggest pitfall when I'm writing, and why I've kind of not really gone anywhere with it. It's just kind of, so I usually try and avoid where I can to like have minimal dialogue because I can't write it. So what's the hardest thing you find about writing script?
I mean, I feel like writers tend to fall into two camps. There's people who prefer writing dialogue over description and people who prefer writing description and direction over dialogue. I feel like we might be in separate camps because okay. I have the complete inverse problem. I love writing dialogue, which is why I tend to stick to kind of audio format. But I am absolutely rubbish at description or direction. I have a lot of trouble kind of blocking out where characters are in the scene and kind of what the key details are that need to be described. But if I'm just doing two characters kind of verbally sparring back and forth, I could write that forever. In fact, a lot of how I develop characters tends to be, if I want to develop a relationship between characters, I write them arguing, even if it's not at all related to the story. I'll just write them having an argument, and normally that'll help me kind of hash out their personalities.
Okay, that sounds really good. Maybe I should do that. Maybe that's a good writing technique for the dialogue.
Either that, or my favorite thing to do if I have a large group of characters is imagine, I imagine them having a video games night together, no matter what sort of setting they're in, just to get the idea of the group dynamic, like who's the one who kind of leans with the controller and is really overenthusiastic but rubbish at the game, like who blue shells everyone, who's constantly yelling throughout the game of Mario Kart, like, you know, just kind of figure out how they all interact. I mean, this is for characters who are friends, but yeah, I don't know. I have a lot of kind of little writing exercises that are completely there just to help put the characters together and get the tone of the dialogue down, and absolutely nothing whatsoever to do with the story, and often completely unrelated in terms of like time or setting.
Well, for me, when it comes to like plot and stuff like that, I usually just take lots of post-it notes and just endlessly write it out, and just the every bit, little beat that I think is important to the story, and that's how that I can do well. Usually I'm quite good at like going, and I know how it's gonna end. I start at the end and I'm like, yeah, I know how that's gonna end. Now it begins. The middle is always a bit hard because it's like trying to get them to the where they need to be, and then yeah, dialogue is just like, oh god, I'll think about that when it comes to it. So yeah, just in terms of trying to get descriptions, I guess it's just if you know, because you clearly know your characters really well, then you can just think about what would that character be doing in this scenario, and that would be how I think you would find it a lot easier.
Yeah, that's the thing. It sounds to me like you kind of do you get the story before you get the characters, or do you get the characters before you get the story?
Yeah, I usually get the story before I get the characters. Yeah.
Yeah. See, I'm the other way around. I get characters first, I get these annoying little voices in my head and I'm like, right, I need to put you somewhere. I need to do something with you or you won't ever shut up. Some of the characters in the project I'm currently working on have been through several different iterations and I've tried putting them in all sorts of ways and gone, no, okay, you don't work there, let's try putting you somewhere else. But they remain the same characters all throughout.
Do you have any of this online? Any of your writing online?
Alas, no. I am trying to work up the courage to post some of it and get some friends to read it, get some opinions. But
it's a big step to do that.
Yeah, it is a very kind of vulnerable thing showing your writing to other people. And especially when you're writing sci-fi, I feel like with sci-fi and fantasy, you know, there's a lot of kind of made up words and pseudoscience and all sorts of stuff that often walks the line between believable and extremely silly. And I often worry quite a lot about friends and like anyone who I trust enough to show my writing to thinking it's silly, which is why I don't tend to show it to other people. But that is bad advice to follow, and it's the complete opposite of what I tell other people when they have this problem. I'm just terrible at following my own advice.
Well, it's something that's very personal to you. You've spent a decent amount of time trying to write this thing, and then throwing it online is where it's kind of like, okay, it's open for scrutiny now.
So it's a
big step. But I would love to read your stuff. So, you know, if you want, you can send it my way.
Awesome. Yeah, I would love that. And likewise, I would love to read your stuff.
Oh, cool. That'd be good. Okay, well, this has been an absolute delight.
Yeah, likewise. This was when Gregor asked me to do this again, I was like, heck yes, immediately. Because I had so much fun last time, so.
Oh, that's good. And how's your makeshift fort?
My makeshift fort is holding up surprisingly well, actually. And is actually quite comfy. I may spend the rest of the evening here.
I'm glad to hear it. Is there anything you wanted to say? Anything you wanted to plug?
I hadn't really thought about it. Build forts. Pardon?
Build more forts, people.
Yes, definitely. Build more forts. Play more music when things are scary. Playing music when things are scary is always a good coping mechanism. But yeah, mostly just thank you so much for having me back on the podcast. This was excellent.
No, my pleasure. And I hope you continue with the quarantunes, and I'll keep an eye on them more. And keep writing and everything, and take care.
Brilliant. Cheers, man.
Thank you.